That's Ricky Rubio making a steal against the Kings, forwarding it on down the line to Zach
making
Levine.
Making a steal.
Making a steal. And could the Kings make a steal of their own and grab Ricky Rubio? This has been a dance that's been going on for about a year now between Ricky Rubio and the T-Wolves and the Kings. There were conversations during the Olympics last year. There were meetings that, depending on who you talk to, did or did not happen between Rubio's representatives and Vlade Divac and his people down in Brazil. And it's one of those things, according to Adrian Wojnarowski yesterday, that the T-Wolves are actively shopping Rubio again. They want a bridge point guard to take him to the Chris Dunn era. Apparently they've seen enough. Now, they've attached Rubio, according to Woj, to multiple offers with Shabazz Muhammad, who's actually younger than Ricky Rubio. Rubio's 26. Muhammad is 24. He was the number 14 pick in the draft a few years back. They want, again, a bridge guard in return, a player capable
of
starting.
I like Muhammad. He's a good player.
A bridge guard? A troll?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody to guard the bridge. Yeah. I like Muhammad in the sense that I think he has a ton of talent, and it was, I think it was about a week ago, he had a pretty decent breakout game. It was like 23, 24 points.
He's a good young player on a team that's loaded with quality young players. So it's I think for him, it's more about opportunity and playing time.
Now, according to Woj, again, the Kings have had a strong interest, which we know, of course, in acquiring Rubio, but no traction on a deal between those two teams because the T-Wolves want to exhaust the market elsewhere for a better return of assets than the Kings can offer. Rubio is 26, as we mentioned. He's making $13.5 million this year. Is owed $29 million through the end of his contract in 2019, which sounds crazy, but now when you actually think about it, that's two and a half more seasons at $30 million a year for a starting point guard. That's not that crazy. So I wrote a little bloggy yesterday, khdk.com, and my idea was here are three potential deals that I could see the Kings doing and possibly the Timberwolves doing from most likely to least likely. And number one, guys, I don't see a deal bringing Ricky Rubio to Sacramento that doesn't involve Darren Collison. It's just it's hard for me to see. Ty Lawson makes such little money that I don't, in 980 grand a year, I think.
Doesn't work.
I don't think that works. Funny you say 980 is little money. So you've got that issue. I think Darren Collison, our good friend, who you can hear on the show later this week, as a matter of fact, I think he kind of has to be a part of the deal. So here's the three that I came up with, guys. I'll bounce off of you as we play Trade Machine. Kings trade number one. This is the one I think might be the most likely. And again, the money works on all of these. Darren Collison and Aaron Aflalo for Ricky Rubio and Shabazz Muhammad. Now, the Kings may have to throw something else in there. Don't get me wrong. If anything, this leans more towards favoring the Kings than the Minnesota Timberwolves. But that gives the T-Wolves Darren Collison to work with Chris Dunn and a much better scorer and shooter than Ricky Rubio. And it also gives a vet guy like Aaron Aflalo a chance to work with Tom Thibodeau and provide them a little bit more oomph off the bench as well. That was the first one.
All right. Wasn't that what he was supposed to do in Sacramento?
Sure was.
Okay.
Shut up, Nate.
I mean, I just think that's a bit of a tough sell.
Here's the other one. Kings trade Darren Collison and Rudy Gay. Kings receive Ricky Rubio, Shabazz Muhammad, and a 2017 second-round pick from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Obviously, this one's a little bit more expensive. But again, if the thought process is you're going to trade Rudy Gay, and in order to get something for him, he has to be traded in the next month, less than a month. You have less than a month to get anything for Rudy Gay before he's gone for the year. Do you hold on to him? The Kings have shown that they can win ball games without Ricky Rubio. In fact, that stretch where they were winning was without Rudy Gay. That's what they were doing. It's a little bit more of a price. But again, Collison and Rudy Gay, this is important, are both free agents at the end of this year.
That's one of those things where that's the most important part about this. And when you look at, you know, making trades and all of these things, especially for Minnesota, if they're trying to figure out kind of how to get some young pieces and make it work, they want an expiring contract. They want someone that they don't have to deal with, you know, next season.
Well, and that's
having,
go ahead.
Having Ricky Rubio is going to do you no good if you have Rudy Gay on your roster.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. There's more to that. We'll get to that in a second. There's more to that, though, than just acquiring Ricky Rubio. You have to do more than just acquire Ricky Rubio. Third option, and this one hurts, I think, the most. The Kings trade Darren Collison, Ben McLemore, and Willie Cauley-Stein. Same return from Minnesota. They get Rubio, Shabazz Muhammad, and 2017 draft pick. You're moving Ben McLemore down the road. You're giving up on that experiment, which I think is long overdue anyways. Not to say he won't be successful. He's just not going to be successful
exactly.
here.
No.
And you've now lost Ben McLemore, Nick Stauskas, and Willie Cauley-Stein. Now you're giving the T-Wolves a young player who has been lost here so far for one reason or the other. And talking about Willie and a guy who's under contract for another 2-3 years, depending on that option. And people are asking, well, why would Minnesota do this? Why would they give up the two young players? Well, they're giving up $20 million is a lot of what's happening. They have Chris Dunn, who needs that time over Ricky Rubio, in their opinion, and they don't want Shabazz Muhammad on that team. He's not fitting into their rotations.
Well, they can't justify turning Ricky Rubio into a backup point guard.
Correct.
That's the thing.
Correct.
They absolutely know that Chris Dunn is the point guard of their future.
Right.
So in terms of salary and making things work, that's how they're looking at it.
You know, Ricky Rubio is an injury concern, number one, but I think that's a tad overblown in the sense that he's played, I think, 31 to 35 games this year. He played, or more than that, actually, I think 35 to 38, something. He played 73, 74 last year. He was injured a little bit the year before.
I think that's more than Omri Caspi.
It is.
Right? And then
Rubio played 82 the year before that. So he definitely had some injury issues, and it's still a concern. Ricky Rubio can't shoot. That's not going to go away.
So that's the biggest thing, and that's the one concern. The one thing that you can acquire as you kind of go on in your career in the NBA is you can acquire a shot.
Yes.
He has not been able to find it for the life of him. And it's one of those things. Jason Kidd wasn't the best shooter originally. He ended his career as a great three-point shooter. Ricky Rubio hasn't made no strides in that. And I'm actually curious in terms of having a point guard, especially playing alongside DeMarcus Cousins, who, yes, is a phenomenal passer, but how much does that help if your man is going to sag off of him the entire time and you're basically putting a free double team on the court with Cuz?
Well, and Nate, that's the thing. I think if they get a guy like Ricky Rubio, you're instantly – he has double, and obviously Collison split in time with Ty Lawson, but he's got double his assists, double his steals, double his rebounds. He's a better defender. Ricky Rubio's defense is way underrated compared to how most people think he is as a defender, but he can't shoot. So for me, if you do acquire Ricky Rubio, it has to be part of a long-term plan where you're entire focus now is either through trade, draft, or free agency. You've got to put shooters at the two and the three.
Yeah,
then
you
I
still
think
need
he
a two guard.
Yes, you do.
I mean, that's it.
And as much as we talk about this, this all comes down to what Minnesota gets out of it. And of all of the teams that are mentioned in this kind of trade talk, the Kings probably have the fewest assets that they're interested in.
That's the problem. And that's where Vlade has to – if this is a deal that he wants – Vlade's going to have to work a little bit of overtime on this. And whatever trade he makes, I'm sure there's going to be some fans that are a little bit hurt. It's definitely a risk. I'm not saying Ricky Rubio at all costs. I'm saying I like Ricky Rubio as a player. I think he'd be a solid addition to this team. That's the price that you're going to have to pay, though. It's going to have to be a Willie Cauley-Stein, a Rudy Gay, Darren Collison, something else. You can't mess with your draft picks. We'll have more on that coming up at 7:30 with Howard Beck. Also 8:30, we'll talk Kings as well. Coming up in 4 minutes, though, 4-down territory. Does Mike Tomlin have anything to apologize for? He did apologize yesterday. And let's talk about Jerry Jones not committing on Tony Romo. Why the hell is he not committing on Tony Romo? We'll get into that next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.
That's Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin in his press conference yesterday. Does Tomlin have anything to apologize for?
You know, I already liked Mike Tomlin going into yesterday. I really did. He's not perfect. He's got some clock management issues he's dealt with before. But I've always liked and respected Mike Tomlin, and that doubled yesterday. Hell no, he has nothing to apologize for. Now, if Mike Tomlin was speaking live to cameras or on a Hard Knocks documentary where he knew he was being filmed, that's one thing. That is a locker room. That is a sanctuary. That is a brotherhood or sisterhood or whatever sport it is in. That's supposed to be a safe space. His privacy was violated by a player. It was a bad thing by Antonio Brown. And Mike Tomlin should not apologize for being a coach and talking to his players the way he did.
I'll take it a step further. Not only does he not need to apologize, but he said absolutely nothing in that video.
Agreed.
That even if it were a Hard Knocks or
Agreed.
Something like that, where he knew it was being filmed, there's nothing to apologize for. He called them a-holes. That is benign locker room talk. Trust me, that is nothing. Doesn't even register.
Yeah, he's got nothing to apologize for. This is the best time of the year, guys. Like, my interest in football has waned so much over the last couple of years. Like, part of the Niners stinking, and like the increase in penalties and all of the type of stuff that kind of turn you off from the NFL. And it all comes back to me this time of year, and it's because of things like what Mike Tomlin said in that locker room. That's the stuff that makes you, Katie. Something about you playing professional sports, right? Like, you know the journey
yeah.
of a season.
Uh-huh.
You know what that is, and you go into week one building up for this moment, and when it all pays off and the coach is talking like, man, that's the type of stuff that yeah. gives you chills as a fan. He's got nothing to apologize for.
Tomlin also alluded to star players bouncing from team to team. Is Antonio Brown that type of player?
Well, he's sending a message that he could be if he doesn't clean up his act. That's how I perceive it. But I think star players bounce from team to team, but I also think there's a long list of star players that don't, and teams put up with all their bull crap because they are so talented. So he could be if the Steelers decide that they don't want any part of it. But look at Odell Beckham Jr. He's still in New York. Where's he going? Nowhere.
I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. Are the Steelers going to pay him what he's worth? isn't that?
That's part of it. I think what we're trying to find out is...
Is Antonio Brown the type of guy that's going to take money and go somewhere else if they want to pay him more? Yes. Yes.
But do we put him in the same category as Terrell Owens, as Chad Ochocinco, as Dez Bryant, as Odell Beckham Jr.? And I don't. And I think that was the point. I don't. I think I don't know Antonio Brown. But
don't?
I don't. Not personally. But but when I look at Antonio Brown and some of the dumb stuff he's done, I look at it more as like a child in an adult's body that just does dumb, childy
things.
Those
guys you listed came across as doing it because, hey, look at me. Check it out.
Right.
I've got the best celebrations. I'm the most important. I'm the best. Antonio Brown, like, he's like a kid that's having fun. He's kind of got that Brett Favre thing
going. He's just not thinking.
No, and that's the problem. Not that he's evil.
Those other guys, though.
Evil Mike Tomlin.
The one and only Jerry Jones says he hasn't made a decision on Tony Romo yet. Other than Dak Prescott getting hit by a bus, any way that Romo plays for Dallas again?
No. I mean, like you said, short of injury, no. He looks good with a ball cap on, though.
Tony Romo?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this is there's plenty of things to mess with Jerry Jones about. He's doing, I think, a very smart thing right now. Even though no other team is going to buy it as the GM, you have to have some form of leverage. And other teams know that the Cowboys are on the hook for a lot of money to Tony Romo next year. The Cowboys need to get anything they can and maximize any value they can for Tony Romo. So he's trying to send the message that, hey, we don't have to trade him. It's a good thing to have these quarterbacks going in. That's more assets. But no, Tony Romo will play for another team next year.
Well, and I think the most disturbing thing out of all of this is learning that Jerry Jones is on a radio show once a week. That's the tough part for me.
What, that surprises you?
No, it doesn't.
The reclusive Jerry Jones?
It doesn't surprise me, but it is annoying. Tony Romo isn't – that's a situation there. They have a lot that they can do with it. I think the most interesting part about the entire situation with him is the relationship that he has with Jerry Jones, and now it's at a point in his career where he has to make a decision.
Kirk Cousins dropping the dime there on the Redskins radio network with the potential hiring of Kyle Shanahan. Mike Florio reports that the Niners could make a play for Kirk Cousins. Is this a smart move?
Not for two first-round draft picks, not for the second pick in the draft, not for anything close to that, not when you're going to be paying Kirk Cousins somewhere around $22 to $25 million, probably over 3 to 4 seasons. You're looking at, seriously, like a four-year, somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million if you give Kirk Cousins what he wants, and I don't think he's worth that. And even if he was worth that, I'd rather see the Niners go in a different direction, depending on what they're going to do in the draft. If they're going to draft a guy like Deshaun Watson, for me, then speaking to Tony Romo, I wouldn't hate to see him in a 49er uniform, if for no other reason to hold that spot for a year, maybe mm-hmm. two, work with Deshaun Watson, and you've got Deshaun behind him in case Romo cracks ribs again.
You're already talking about Deshaun Watson like it's a given that they're going to take him at number two.
If they went for him there, then I think a guy like Romo would make more. I'd rather have a guy like Tony Romo than Kirk Cousins for next year. Absolutely. Because neither of those guys to me is a long-term answer.
I don't know. I think that when you look at the quarterback situation, I agree with you in the sense that you do not want him if you're giving up draft picks. And I think that it's all going to come down to how they handle that number two draft pick. And we talked about it earlier. Maybe it's smarter because of the needs that they have to try and trade that pick for multiple other picks. So I don't think bringing in Kirk Cousins is the answer if it has anything to do with their draft picks.
If you want a quarterback that can on any given week look like an absolute world beater, but could also on any given week cost you a game, yeah, you could go trade draft picks for Kirk Cousins, and you can pay him about $6 to $7 million more annually than a guy that's on your roster that can do the same thing, and that's Colin Kaepernick.
Yes,
and
yeah.
He's not going to cost you draft picks. Listen, I'm not saying that Colin Kaepernick is the answer. I don't even think he's going to be around, but I can tell you that I think he can get you just as close to a Super Bowl with the right people around him as Kirk Cousins could, and he's not going to cost you draft picks, and he's going to cost you a lot less salary.
By the way, not for nothing, but Kirk Cousins is also throwing the ball to Pierre Garçon, to DeSean Jackson,
yeah.
And the most underrated tight end, I think, by far in the entire game when he can stay healthy, and that's Jordan Reed. Mm-hmm. Jordan Reed does not get enough credit for the work that he does and how damned good he is as a tight end and as a receiver. And the 49ers, you're only as good as your offensive line and your receivers when you're a quarterback. To me, that is.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. And the Niners don't have an offensive line, and they don't have receivers.
That's why you look at Colin Kaepernick a handful of years ago versus last year. There you go.
Well, and to Nate's point, and I'd rather have Colin Kaepernick in a situation like that, a guy who maybe isn't the pure thrower, whatever that means, his Cousins, but a guy who, because you don't have an offensive line, a guy who can escape trouble. Kirk Cousins isn't escaping nothing.
Mm-mm.
Kirk Cousins is going to go down and get a face full of dirt.
You got to have some playmaker on that offense.
I'll tell you what, Jersey Mike's is a playmaker. They're a playmaker for your sandwiches. Two Sacramento area locations, 624 Watt Avenue, Arden Town Center, Fulton Marconi, and the Town and Country Village. Proud sponsors of Fortown Territory. That's how I'm going to say it from now on,
oh,
Katie.
Oh, Lord.
Coming up at 7:35. That's 5 minutes from now, actually, a little less than 7:35. Howard Beck's going to talk NBA with us. And at 7:55, less than a half an hour, your opportunity to win Bon Jovi tickets. You think you're a fan? We'll play a snippet of a song. You're the first person to call in. You'll get those tickets, and you'll qualify to get your own bay at Top Golf this weekend to watch championship football. It's The Drive, back in five, Sports 1140 KHDK. 7:35, time to get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo. I've been telling you to get ready for a week, and it's here tomorrow, okay? So you better be ready tomorrow through Sunday at Cal Expo. Get down there and have yourself a blast, just like my dad will. Coming up in 20 minutes, we got our Bon Jovi contest. We'll play a little bit of a song for you by Bon Jovi. Be the first to call in. Guess what? You win tickets to the February 28th show at Golden One Center and qualify for your own bay at Topgolf this Sunday. Watch a little championship football with us. Alien Voisin had a column as we wait for Howard Beck to join us on Willie Cauley Stein today. Some interesting quotes from Willie. Says, quote, "I feel like I was showing stuff at the end of last season that would make people say, oh, damn, they got a steal in the draft. Now it's like I took 25 steps forward and 30 steps back. It's like my whole rookie season didn't matter, and I'm back at square one. Nothing I did last year is having an effect on my career. It's been very frustrating." Aileen goes on to say, now this is quoting Aileen's column, not Willie Cauley Stein, "With majority owner Vivek Ranadive's directive to assemble a roster that could compete for the eighth playoff spot in the Western Conference in year one at Golden One Center, the kids essentially have been instructed to practice hard, keep their mouths shut, and sit and watch their elders." We'll get to more of that in just a second. Right now, a proud graduate of UC Davis who's gone on to do tremendous things working for USA Today, the Daily News, New York Times, and currently Bleacher Report, the one, the only, Howard Beck. Hello, Howard. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
How are things going in Howard Beckland? We continue to follow your career and your writings, and you're doing just a fine job.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I got a story appearing today on James Harden and the Rockets phenomenon. I think I'm only the 100th beat writer to or NBA reporter to finally get into the Rockets. But so I got that coming today if folks want to check that out. But things are going well. Thank you.
Want to ask you real quick. We'll focus here locally, of course, because that's where we are on the Sacramento Kings. We were just alluding to a story about Willie Cauley Stein in today's B. He is not happy once again with his role with the team. And Ricky Rubio is back in the news now, Howard. And if you believe the reports, the T-Wolves are looking to shop him and are not able to come to terms necessarily with the assets the Kings have to offer. How do you see that one playing out?
Well, you know, this is where the Kings find themselves. they haven't drafted particularly well over recent years. They've made a lot of, you know, what could loosely be defined as kind of win now gambits that have turned out poorly, and some of which, of course, have cost them future assets and future picks. So they're not that well positioned to make a deal. If Ricky Rubio is on the market, and, you know, I mean, he's been on the market almost annually, or at least rumored to be, there are teams out there that have better assets to offer. But, you know, there also aren't a ton of teams that are necessarily in a position to make a move for Rubio anyway. A lot of teams are already pretty well set at point guard or are at other different points in their development where they may not be making that move for him. So maybe the competition for him won't be that stiff. Maybe it won't take a lot. But the Kings have to ask themselves, as they need to constantly, who are they and where are they heading? I mean, where is this ultimately going? Are they keeping DeMarcus Cousins forever? And is that really the best way forward? If they are, who fits best with him? Does a non-shooting point guard like Ricky Rubio, who's a fantastic distributor and defender, how much does that push them forward? And I'm a Rubio fan. I like him. You know, are they going young? Or are they going old? Are they rebuilding? Are they doing this thing where they just keep patching it up and chasing the eighth seed, which is the dumbest thing in the world, by the way, and look where it's gotten them over the last couple seasons. I don't know what the agenda is anymore with that team. I'm not sure that anybody could define it.
Well, and I think that's kind of the big question right now, being here in Sacramento. It's tough to figure out, is this a team that is trying to develop for the future? You've got DeMarcus Cousins, who obviously is kind of in the prime of his career. So are you going to be developing moving forward, or are you trying to win now? And you mentioned that eighth spot, which is something I think the perception here is this organization wants to win now. They want to be a playoff team the first year in the Golden 1 Center. And the outside perception of it all, that's where I'm curious. What do you see as the plan for this team right now?
I don't know, Kate. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to get a sense of it, other than it's very, very clear that heading into the new arena, they wanted to have a team that they thought could be a playoff team. They fell short again last year by quite a bit. And they want a team now that they're in there that's going to compete for a playoff spot. Here's the problem with that. It's not that by definition being the eighth seed is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, look, you're fodder for the Warriors. You're going to be swept out, mm-hmm. and the playoff run is going to be brief and the thrill short. But being an eighth place team isn't bad if you're a young team on the rise. If the Minnesota Timberwolves, for instance, were having their breakthrough season right now that we expected that hasn't quite come to pass, but that's a young team on the rise. When they get to the eighth seed, they will be an eighth seed in a meaningful way because it's step one toward something better. They're on a growth curve. If the Kings get there with this team, it'll be with a losing record because that's what the eighth seed is going to be this year. Mm-hmm. There's still no upward trajectory. I mean, they won 33 games last year. If they win 36 or 37 and make the playoffs, is that progress? Is that a team that's truly on a growth trajectory? With Rudy Gay, you know, heading for the exits the second he can when the season ends, and obviously other changes that will probably come after that. I mean, that's the thing. There are different kinds of eighth seeds, and the kind that the Kings are chasing, I think, is the worst kind because it's the let's get there just for the sake of being there and figure out the next step sometime later. I just don't think that's a constructive long-term plan.
Howard Beck, a Bleacher Report, joining us on KHTK. I'm asking you to speculate a little bit here, but should they fail to make that eighth seed, what are the consequences? I mean, are we looking at more instability? Is there going to be firings? I mean, I don't know that you know for sure, but I mean, gosh, there's got to be some accountability there, right?
Yeah, this is one of those other tricky things. When you've had as much dysfunction and instability as they've had, and trust me, I've seen plenty of this up close being in New York and, you know, following the Knicks for the last, you know, dozen years. The problem is these things compound themselves because, there shouldn't be consequences normally. You don't want to say, well, everything's just fine and we'll just keep plodding forward with the same group. But instability breeds instability. So at some point you have to figure out, you choose your leadership, have some faith in them, and back away and let them do their job. Part of the problem with the Kings, as it has been with the Knicks, by the way, and I've seen many parallels over the last several years, the problem is overactive, meddling ownership. Ren Adebe needs to find somebody he believes in and then just get out of the way. Stop pushing for, you know, Rondo deals and pushing for whatever quick fixes you think are going to get you some relevance in the near term or get your co-owners off your back, those shouldn't be the goals. Everybody loves Vlade Divac. He's, you know, a very popular figure around the league. I don't know that anybody would say that they think that Vlade Divac is qualified to be running a team, especially after all the years he spent out of the NBA. They brought in Ken Catanella this offseason, which I thought was a great move. Smart guy, been around the league for a long time. But that front office is still small by NBA standards. I think they're understaffed. I don't know if they have the right leadership in totality right now. And they've gone through so many coaches that, you know, if they lose and they want to blame Jaeger, I mean, they can, but, you know, that's not getting them anywhere either, changing out coaches again. How many more guys can Cousins go through?
Howard Beck joining us, and Howard continuing that point. You're absolutely right, and you know this, that Vlade is, you know, a basketball Jesus here, and is, by all accounts, by anybody who's dealt with him, one of the most wonderful people on the planet. But it is a fair question. I don't think Vlade would want any favors because of his personality. So I want to try to continue to push a possible narrative with you that I've been pushing around here and been getting killed on. So feel free to kill me. But it just occurs to me that Philadelphia is 3 wins behind the Sacramento Kings. And as you know, they have the swappability with their pick this year, and they own the Kings unprotected in 2019. So when Nate talks about accountability, Sam Hinkie is still teaching right now in Santa Clara. He's hanging around Stanford, and he seems like that type of Silicon Valley mind that would be very attractive up here. I'm not going to ask you if Vivek would hire Sam and fire Vlade, but I do want to ask you, are you sensing a bit of the reclamation of Sam Hinkie's reputation because of what Philly's doing this year, or is it too early for that?
No, I think the reclamation is in progress. And look, I'm a huge Sam fan. I think he is brilliant. I think what he was doing in Philly, people might take issue with what was going on there on you know, a moral basis, or, you know, competitively speaking. They may disagree with any number of things. And Sam made his mistakes, for sure. But what Sam Hinkie did in terms of having a long-term plan and executing it, I mean, they knew exactly what they wanted. And this is what I mean by, you know, having a plan for your franchise. A long-term vision. You can disagree with what the 76ers were doing during that period of time, but Sam Hinkie stuck to his convictions. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew how he was going to do it, and he pursued it. And here they are now with Joel Embiid looking like one of the best young bigs in the league, putting up phenomenal numbers, and seems like a great guy to be around besides. And they've got Ben Simmons waiting in the wings there when he gets healthy. Dario Saric is playing pretty well. So they've got some promise. You would rather, and they've got picks, and you would rather be in their position than in the Kings' position.
Howard, I'm curious, when you look at the NBA right now, there are some big names outside of just what's going on here in Sacramento. There are some big names that are up in the news right now, as some disgruntled employees, maybe Carmelo Anthony being one of them. He has that no trade clause. What do you think the likeliness is in your mind of something happening with him and him being with a different team before the end of the season?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, the Knicks and Carmelo Anthony have been doing this dance for a few years now, where I feel like, you know, Carmelo's had opportunities to get out via free agency and he chose not to. And the Knicks have had their opportunities prior to that to trade him before he had the no trade clause. I don't understand to this day why they gave him the no trade clause. He had no leverage with them. They were the only ones who could offer him the money that he wanted. They gave him a near max deal a couple of years ago, which, again, I'm not sure was justified. And so here they are, where, you know, he doesn't really fit where they are right now. They've got to be building around Kristaps Porzingis and figuring out, you know, as I say again, the best franchises have a long-term vision and they execute it. The long-term vision for New York should be, what do we do to build around this phenomenal young player that we got, you know, in the draft a couple Junes ago in Porzingis? And Carmelo's horizon doesn't fit that. He's 32, 33 in a couple of months. And having one of his worst seasons statistically, his efficiency is way down. It makes sense to have a breakup, but that no trade clause is a problem. And Carmelo's desire to be in New York is an obstacle for them. So I don't know how this is going to end, but I think that at the latest, in, you know, July of 2018, he can be a free agent. And I think if he's not gone by then, I think he'll certainly go then.
Howard, paired with the fact that there's something going on there between Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony, there's been a lot of stuff in the media that it's like, okay, they're kind of having it out in the media, obviously not behind closed doors. Then you actually enter into the Derrick Rose situation. How much validity is there to the rumors that there is a problem between he and Jeff Hornacek?
Well, I don't think that this team if you're asking about relations between anybody in this team, you know, at this point, I think everything is strained. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no happiness in a locker room where they're going through the kind of season they're going through, and especially the investments they made to acquire Rose and to sign Joakim Noah. That was another team that, you know, they were kind of chasing the eighth seed, really. They did the quick fix plan last summer, and it's kind of blowing up in their face. I don't think Rose and Hornacek have been on the same page. I do think there's tension there. I, at this point, think that, you know, to the extent that they were taking a one-year flyer on Rose, I don't think it's worked well. I don't think Rose will be back. If they could move him at the deadline and get something for him, I think they would. But, you know, we'll see. I don't expect to see him re-signed by New York this summer.
You know, Howard, with all of these kind of leaks media-wise in the ship for the Knicks, you get the feeling that maybe Phil Jackson does some of this stuff to distract people from the fact that he's pretty likely a lousy executive that put together an awful team that may be running a system that has been passed by the game.
Well, they're really not running the triangle anymore. There's been a fixation on that. And, you know, they were going to use triangle elements now, and they weren't going to run a full triangle and all that. There's not much of it there. I mean, it's the offense isn't the issue. Phil Jackson's leadership is certainly one of the issues for them, maybe even a primary issue. He hasn't distinguished himself as an executive, but you know, it's always a strange thing because you never quite know for sure whether the person in charge is the person in charge and how much James Dolan behind the scenes, the owner, is doing. Some of what Phil did for the last couple of years kind of made sense to me. And then there were times like last summer where all of a sudden he shifted gears and went hard for the patch it up, get some veterans and try to win now, that to me smacked of, you know, the Knicks of the past where it was always going for the quick fixes. And to me that smacked a little bit of Dolan's influence. And I don't know for sure. But it felt that way. But yeah, I mean, look, on balance, you know, Phil's run as team president has not been glorious.
Howard Beck, Bleacher Report, joining us. Howard, as we wrap up, I want to ask you about the Clippers. Chris Paul out 6 to 8 weeks. J.J. Redick set to be a free agent this summer. Talk a little bit about the Clippers' future, and are we seeing the beginning of the end for the Clippers as we know them?
I kind of hope not. I like them as a foil to the Warriors. And, you know, Chris Paul's one of the, like, he's not going to get the credit. It's for being forgotten already because, you know, people are now fixated on their playoff failures. Chris Paul's one of the great point guards we've ever seen. And Blake Griffin's phenomenal. DeAndre Jordan's a good player. J.J. Redick has been great for them. And when they're healthy, that's a team that I think a lot of people thought, you know, no one is expected to beat the Warriors, but they could actually challenge them. And they could hit them in some spots where the Warriors might be a little bit weaker, in the front court. And the idea that this may be the end because of another series of injuries that's going to end in disappointment for them for the season, it's not the way you want to see it go. Like, if they were going to break it up because they just couldn't break through, that's one thing. But the injuries cut them short last spring. They've cut them short before. And now we've got, you know, Blake Griffin has been out. Now Chris Paul is out for a couple months, you know, may not come back to the very tail end of the regular season. I don't know where that leaves them for the playoffs, but all of a sudden a team that you thought, hey, look, you know, a break goes their way here or there. Maybe they could knock off the Warriors in a series. It just doesn't even sound plausible anymore because of all the misfortune. And, you know, it's really going to be really expensive to keep that team together. And so, you know, do you do that? If you let those guys walk, what are you left with? You know, I mean, who are you retooling around? It's not like they have some surplus of young players to rebuild with. They've sent out a lot of picks over the last couple of years. And so, you know, I feel like no matter how the season goes, they almost have no choice but to just bring everyone back, assuming that they all want to come back.
Howard, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview you were writing something coming out about James Harden. They're having a tremendous year, and James has been given the keys by the coach. D'Antoni's having a great year, and they look like they could be a possible foil for the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, the glitch there, or the handicap there, if they're going to meet the Warriors in a playoff series, of course, is going to be defense.
Yep.
They're better than they appear, just like with the Suns, you know, and we now have the benefit of stat sites that show us, you know, the pace-adjusted stats. They're middle of the pack defensively. They're not terrible, and they're so potent offensively that they can just crush a lot of teams. It's going to be different against the Warriors, who have just as much, even more, offensive firepower, obviously. And the Rockets, if you can find a way to contain Harden or make him, you know, a low percentage guy in a series or any given game, they don't really have great second options. They've got really great shooters in Gordon and Anderson and some other guys who can do some things, but nobody else who can create. And the Warriors are just so stacked in that regard. And so, you know, could the Rockets make it fun and entertaining? Yes. Can I see them beating the Warriors in a series with they have, you know, in a very Harden-centric offense? I think when you become too one-dimensional in the playoffs, that usually means a quick exit for you, especially against a team like the Warriors.
Always appreciate your time, Howard. UC Davis' own, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Go Aggs.
Go Aggs.
Thanks, Howard.
Care. That's Howard Beck of Bleacher Report. We will take a break. Before we do, though, it's time, Golfing on a Prayer. Very simple. We've got a bay for you to golf out at Top Golf this Sunday for Championship Sunday. Now, we're taking qualifiers all week long, and the qualifying prize are tickets to Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi's playing at Golden One Center February 28th. So what we've been doing and what we'll do right now is play a snippet of a Bon Jovi hit. It's a hit, not just some random B-sider. You be the first to call in with the name of the song. Not only do you get the Bon Jovi tickets, but you qualify to go to Top Golf this Sunday. Matt, yes, Nate.
It's got
to
be a hit, man. Come on. Real Bon Jovi fan?
I mean, the trick here.
Not going to get into the deep cuts?
What I'm really afraid of, and this is why radio bits are always fun, is that we're going to get somebody who's like a massive Bon Jovi fan, and then they win the Top Golf prize, and they're like, meh. Or they're a Top Golf fan, but they, you know, this kind of, we know they like Bon Jovi, and this is their key to get in. If we minimize it too much and make deep cuts to Bon Jovi, I mean, we need golfy Bon Jovi people. Give us the snippet there, Matt. Got it. I got it. All right. Let's just say that, let's see. That was an earlier Bon Jovi song, I believe. I believe that was leading into the hook of that entire song. There we go. Calls already. 339-1140. 1-800-920-1140. In just under an hour at 8:40, you're going to be able to text in to win tickets to Monster Jam. January 20th through the 22nd at Golden One Center. Listen for the keyword. Text it to 44-1140 in just under an hour at 8:40, and you will win. When we get back, we've got all kinds of stuff for you. Michael Irvin had some comments on Antonio Brown. Speaking of diva wide receivers, also Jerry Jones on Tony Romo, and Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger on that whole Antonio Brown situation. So we got a lot of sound for you. We'll also play for you what George Carl said to D'Lo and Jason and Ken yesterday on the Lowdown. You can grab that interview in its entirety at khtk.com. Back in 3 minutes. Don't go away on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.